and welcome to another episode of No Plans to Merge. I am your host, Caleb Porzio.
Hello, Caleb. I'm your other host, Daniel Colborn.
Thank you for joining me today, Daniel Colborn.
I don't normally say hello, Caleb, before I introduce myself. That was a new innovation.
Daniel.
What's up, bud?
We didn't say the sponsor for this episode.
Oh.
But this episode is sponsored by Soup.
Soup.
Yes.
Right.
Daniel, you ever make soup?
Yeah. Not recently. Well, that's not true. I mean, we have some canned soup, but like scratch soup, like not recently.
Sure. Here's the move, Daniel. Tell me, are you like me? Do you want to eat relatively healthy and inexpensively at lunchtime?
Yes.
Daniel, what do you eat at lunch?
I don't.
You don't eat any lunch?
I very rarely eat lunch.
You eat snacks and stuff throughout the day?
I honestly don't even do that much of that.
But do you eat nothing from the time you wake up to the time you have dinner?
Often I will eat like a muffin or a little oatmeal.
Okay, where'd you get the muffin?
A store, and it was sitting on my counter.
Okay.
I didn't bake it.
Oh, right. Okay. I figured that was the case. Daniel, is your video insanely laggy?
No. Should I turn off my video?
I don't know. I just hit. Let me. You know what? You know we're here. Let me get you back here. Share your webcam with me again while we're on this, you know, recording here.
Mm-hmm. It's an audio.
See
medium.
If this fixed. So interestingly, well, let me cap off this this soup situation. Here's the move: you take a pot, you cook the soup in the pot. So like even the things you have to like simmer beforehand, you do in the pot with oil in the pot, and then you just keep adding things to the pot and then the broth, whatever, and there's your soup.
You deglaze.
You deglaze. You take the soup, and then you put it in the fridge, in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
With the lid on, and then every day throughout the week you scoop yourself a bowl for lunch, and you've just solved all of your food problems for lunch.
That's pretty good. Do you make stock ever?
I have done that for sure. This time I just bought a bone broth.
So I'm like out of stock right now, but it's pretty common for me to every 3 to 6 months make stock.
Yeah.
And put it in quart containers and put it in my freezer.
Yeah.
And so I just have like quarts of frozen stock in my freezer. And so, you know, if I want to make like a, you know, like a crock pot meal, I just like got an ice cube of stock that I can throw in the crock pot ahead of time.
Cool.
Like
rice and stuff just to give it some of that flavor, or you just,
I don't normally do that,
soup.
But like if I'm doing like a braise of some kind, or like, you know, like potatoes and carrots and a pork shoulder or something.
Yeah. Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Daniel, you're not laggy right now, but I thought it would be just fun to mention here that on Tuple. So I was on Ben Ornstein's podcast and we were just hanging out after talking, and he's done this before. Like, I think he's that kind of founder guy where any person he ever talks to, he's like, by the way, what can Tuple do better? I'm sure he's asked you this question. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, well, I guess the one annoying thing is Tuple isn't like face forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm like recording with Daniel or something, I can't see my face where I can in Zoom. I only see Daniel's face unless I open that extra, you know, like that drop down in the menu bar. And he's like, well, that's by design. He's basically was like, I think you're a psychopath if you want to see your own face. Like, you're like a narcissist, whatever. He was just like shaming me for wanting to see my own face. But he's like, but everybody universally asked that. So we did add it. I just tried it for the first time. And the reason I'm saying this whole thing is I tried it and your face, my face shows up overlaid on your face, but very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't expand it.
I think you can actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I think if you hit the three dots on the top right, there's layout. Self view is hidden, small, or big.
Okay. All right. Well, they at least, I just know that they had meetings internally where people are like, people really want this. And Ben's like, absolutely not. We have principles. This, nobody like wants this for the right reasons. We're not doing it. And then eventually they cave and they're like,
we'll make it really small.
But we'll make it really small. And then they're like, but we also need it big. Okay, we'll make the default really small.
Yeah. And we're including an option for hidden just so that good people can use it.
Right. Right. So yeah, there you go, Daniel. But that's awesome. That's my intro. Do you have any sponsor reads or anything?
No. But
you want to jump right into it?
I want to jump right. So okay, let me like set some stage here. Okay. So we recorded our first episode back after a long hiatus.
Yeah.
And we, you know, it was just like a casual, mostly catching up episode. You know, yep. there wasn't a ton of meat there. Then like literally moments afterwards, the whole planet scale debacle goes down. And then there was a little bit of noise about, like, I think Justin Jackson was like, I want to hear Daniel and Caleb talk about this, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I hadn't put out the old episode yet. So I was like, oh, well, I have to put out an episode, but it's not going to be the episode that people are talking about wanting.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, we're putting this out, but we have to put out also an episode that is the one people want.
Yeah.
So I have three things I want to talk about. There is the planet scale thing and Aaron Francis and venture capital as a concept. That's like one thing. Then there is my new keyboard, which is my old keyboard. And then there is, and I want to hear about your keyboard because I know stuff. Then I also want to talk about, what was the other one I sent you?
I don't know, Deke. I'll have to pull up the old Telegram.
It's not important.
All right, not so important. AI replacing devs.
AI replacing devs. Let's start with keyboards because it's easy.
Okay.
What's your keyboard situation right now?
The
ErgoDocs?
Yeah, the ErgoDocs Easy. Yep.
Okay. So you've been on that since you left Titan, basically, right?
Like
you
left Titan.
You had it at Titan?
I did.
Okay, cool.
Yep, because I had that. I woke up one morning and I literally couldn't type at all. And I called Matt and was like, I'm willing to work. I just don't know what to do. I can't even type. And they're like, all right, well, first thing, you know, I was like, I can move my fingers if they're vertical. So I went through a series of vertical keyboards and eventually, actually, I know that it was a Titan because I just, when I worked at Titan, I lived in a different place and I was just looking through photos or something. And I found a photo of me standing at my desk with the ErgoDocs Easy split keyboard things on my hip.
Chair.
I had made like a holster on my belt. So I'm wearing a belt that has these ErgoDocs so I can just rest my arms down and type against my legs. And that was a Titan. So yes, I use the ErgoDocs Easy. Yep.
Nice. So I bought a Moonlander when they came out.
Okay.
And I tried to use it and I couldn't use it.
Yeah.
And I just, there's never a good time to switch keyboards.
Yes.
And so I just unswitched and went back to my Happy Hacking keyboard, which I've had forever.
Okay.
And recently I was talking to Jesse Leet about keyboard layouts, as one does, and trying to like find my holy grail keyboard, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And he just kept being like, well, look at my keyboard layout. Well, do you want to open GitHub together and look at my keyboard layout? And he was making a lot of sense is the problem. And so
that's an issue, yeah.
He's working on one of these like super minimal split ergo keyboards where there's like 44 keys or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's crazy, but I do have this Moonlander and I can like duplicate most of your layout on my Moonlander.
Uh-huh.
And then there's parts of it that I wanted to do differently. So I've got a Moonlander and I've been removing keys from it.
Oh, really?
Yes. So
there are
a lot of keys on it, huh? There are a lot of keys on it. So I've got a Moonlander and I've got, all of your letter keys, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I've got all your number keys, obviously. I've got a column to the right of the letters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've got four thumb keys.
Okay, yep.
And then I've got on each hand, I've got two internal keys. So like to the right of G and T and to the left of Y and H.
What's that? Oh, I gotcha. Like inward facing keys.
Inward facing keys, yeah. So that's my current layout. So I've removed a total of 10 keys from this keyboard.
Yeah.
And I think I if I remove two more keys from this keyboard, I am at Jesse's layout. Jesse's bigger layout. He has two layouts.
Yeah.
Right. So if I remove two more keys, I'm at Jesse's bigger layout. And then I can buy one of
Do you have the labeled keys?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you?
I don't, which puts me in a position where I don't use all the keys for sure, because it's all like custom mapped and whatever. But I think I pretty much use what you use. Yeah. I got two keys for each thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But actually looking right now, there are four extra keys on each thumb I never use. There's the letter keys that I use, the number keys that you're talking about, the outer columns, mm-hmm. which, you know, I use on my right hand for like semicolon
and quote and
tab.
Stuff. Oh, on your right hand, you have tab over there.
I don't actually know. I think so. I don't know. I have tab on my left and mm-hmm. probably right, but whatever. And then like caps lock, shift, and then the bottom row below that, like where control and alt and mm-hmm. that would be. You have that too?
No, so I've removed all of that except for two keys that are the innermost ones that my thumbs can reach.
Okay. And those are the ones you're using for control and alt or whatever? Function.
Control is on my outer column on my pinky.
Okay.
Where caps lock would be.
Hmm.
And then alt is the leftmost one on my left hand.
Okay. All right. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, all that to say, like, I'm in an aspirational moment right now where I'm growing and developing, and I've reached a point where, like, it's not that embarrassing to type on this keyboard on a pairing session anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a little embarrassing. I still have to say I'm learning a new keyboard.
Yeah.
But like, I can do it and I can like feel okay doing it.
Right.
A couple key innovations. I don't know if, have you done any like PHP specific customizations of your layout?
Yes.
So tell me about them. Cause I have three that are
okay.
good.
I only have one, I think, interesting one, and it actually got nuked when I reflashed the firmware and whatever. It's, I had a key for a PHP arrow. So the hyphen and
fat
the,
or skinny.
What's that?
Fat or skinny?
Skinny.
Okay.
Yep. And I used it all the time.
Yeah.
And now it's gone because the only way to add that macro was with, what's that program that people...
QMK.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I was writing C or whatever you have to write for that. And that's, mm-hmm. for me, that type of thing is like, I'm only doing this once
because
mm-hmm. it's way too much context to like get back into. So anyway.
Totally.
What about you?
So I have on my home row... In a symbol layer, a layer that is full of symbols.
Yeah.
On my home row, F is a dollar sign.
Okay.
So it's like, that's my fingers just always on that key.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just like get a dollar sign immediately.
Mm.
And then on my right hand, so G and H are open and closed angle brackets.
Yeah.
Right? Symmetrically.
Mm-hmm.
And then J, K, L are... hyphen or like, you know, like dash equals an underscore, right?
Yep.
And cool. So to make arrows, I just do like,
oh nice,
J just put them close to each other.
Oh, that kind of solves the problem of not being
and so
able
you just
to
kind
do
of like
multi,
you just kind of like roll your fingers, right?
Yeah.
So it's either like middle index or ring index,
yeah,
to make an arrow depending That's on cool. which arrow you want.
Right. Yeah, I still make arrows. I went back to by hand. Now I'm thinking I reach way up to the right for that hyphen,
mm-hmm.
and then I do the caret in the bottom right with shift.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a pleb.
I guess I
did one thing with brackets. So you have square brackets, you have curly braces, and mm-hmm. you have...
Parentheses.
So yep. I have these on the left hand in a new layer. There's picture like... they're just in twos on top of each other, you know, open,
okay.
close up top, open, close middle, open, close bottom. And I love that. And that's been like a nice little thing, but.
So I have all three of those on the same key, but in three different layers.
Oh man, yeah. Dude, I can only handle one alternate layer.
So I have two alternate layers. So one is navigation and one is symbols, but cool. I cheated and put parentheses on my navigation layer.
Hope.
This is the only key that has three layers of operation.
Yeah. Wow. I have grown to like, in my second layer, the number rows at the top, the number row on the right hand has like, in the middle is play and then skip right, skip left, pause and mute, or pause is play, but then mute. And I use those a lot.
Also, in my symbol layer, all of the, so I have like all the symbols from the number keys, but I have them shifted down a key so they're easier to reach.
Yeah.
So like exclamation point is on Q and is on W. So it's just like, it's basically just like everything shifted down one key to make it a little easier to reach.
Dude, so let me tell you why you're screwing yourself over right now, okay?
Because I'm going to be live coding
this
on stage.
This is what's the problem. I am ruined for live coding.
Yeah.
I never type on my laptop.
I've been trying to spend a day a week on my laptop.
I suck at typing on my laptop. And I am like such a fool live coding. It is like actually a big problem for me. So you're ruining yourself for live coding on your laptop. And you can tell native laptop, native like Apple keyboard users.
Mm-hmm.
Blazing fast. I was snappy. That way at one point.
Snappy.
And I am so not snappy. And this keyboard, I am not blazing fast on, and I've been using it for like 5 years. I'm fast. Like I don't really mess up because of the keyboard anymore. It's just using a mechanical keyboard that's split and tented. It's just not as fast as like your hands nice and close together on a really lightweight Apple chiclet keyboard, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not as fast. There's more like lifting to do. You're lifting your fingers more and pushing things.
You could get keys that have a higher actuation point so that they actuate higher in the key press.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep, that would be an optimization. And whatever. I'm just not a fast typer, and I think my keyboard is partially to blame. The other thing I want to say is the Moonlander, I bought it and I immediately returned it. I thought it felt not good. I think.
Yeah, well, so the key, there's that big red key on it.
Yeah.
That key sucks and is pointless.
Right.
So and by being red, it makes you feel like you're supposed to use it a lot.
Right.
But it's like in a completely inaccessible place. So I just immediately removed it.
You're a tall boy, so maybe this is fine for you, but I have like pretty lanky hands. Like I would say lankier than the average hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the thumb was too far. I always felt like I was stretching my hand.
It is unless you do the like wrap thing where you like bend it over.
Uh-oh.
Like if you make it like concave where like...
Right. Like big time concave.
Yeah. Then it works. I'm not doing that right now, so it is a stretch.
It's a big stretch. I couldn't believe it. And then I looked online. I thought that the Moonlander was like the thing, and I'd been drooling over it for so long. Finally did it, felt this way, and then looked online. Tons of people are like I think it's at least 50-50. Mm. 50 are like, this is great, and the other 50 are like, this is the worst. What? And it would be, and it honestly, it felt cheaper than my ErgoDox Easy.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it didn't deliver on everything it was supposed to deliver on.
Yeah. So my long-term goal is not to be on the Moonlander, but it's like, I'm learning this layout now.
Yeah. And right.
Like working
and then you can
down
carry
key
it
by
you.
Key. And then as I, once I've removed enough keys, then I can go buy one of Jesse's keyboards.
Just make sure whatever you're doing, you can carry with you to other keyboards. Like I did that PHP arrow thing that I got used to.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, that's not an easy thing. So like, just make it easy so that
I think the key is to not stop typing on a laptop.
That's the key,
right? Like just like also go out and work at a coffee shop once a week and don't forget how to type on a laptop.
I honestly don't know if that's enough, but
okay, fair enough.
I don't know.
But
good for you, Daniel. Yep,
thank you, sir. I'm having a good time over here.
Yeah, good. I think Kemp Hill is on the ErgoDox Easy now.
Ooh.
As well. I think he just after traveling the keyboard planet for
after putting
years.
10 grand into keyboards or whatever
right
he did.
He landed on this, and the EZ is a great keyboard, man. I thought the Moonlander came to dethrone it, but I think it's better.
Well, have you seen the Voyager? They're
no,
so the Voyager is the ZSA, the people who made the Moonlander.
Yep.
It's their next keyboard.
Okay.
And it's less keys, and it's using the chalk switches, which are the like low profile, low travel, flat ones. So it's much closer to like a Magic keyboard or something.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway, I think Mitch, the Elixir Tools guy, uses one of those.
Okay. The Voyager. Okay, I think I did see this. Nope. I don't think I did. Wow, yeah, this is sleek, man. Cool.
It's impressive.
Yeah, it is. I could get on this. There's no tenting, though? Oh, there's tenting. Tentin.
Tentin.
Yeah. Tentin. It's not very high tenting, but
yeah,
this would be nice because the my keyboard's a little fat. Yours is thinner mm-hmm. than mine, but I travel with it, and it's yeah. just not the simplest.
This is a chonker, too, though. Like, when it's in its case, it's big.
Yeah, that's true. The case is cool. That's very cool. Yeah,
it is a nice case.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, keyboards. All right,
moving on.
Moving on.
Okay. So, PlanetScale. So, I don't think we need to, like, explain that much what happened. But basically, like, PlanetScale fired everybody, including your friend of mine, Aaron Francis, the face of PlanetScale. And they also removed the free tier.
Yeah.
And the CEO was out here saying, like, the average PlanetScale customer pays us $200,000 a month or whatever, which wild. So anyway, all that to say, that's the situation. I have like thoughts in several directions. Do you have anything to say? I haven't really heard your thoughts on any of this.
I mean, it sucks what happened to Aaron, and I'm kind of new to VC, the VC world. I never worked in it mm-hmm. at all. And it seems to me that this is kind of like not that surprising, because VC funded startup-y places like this, your friends start getting really gravy jobs, and then it's like, I don't know, I guess there's this, it's like VC in a sense, it's like too good to be true, you know, mm-hmm. and there is this sense of pouring a bunch of stuff on to this thing and not really being not like being that discerning, you know, about mm-hmm. like where money is going mm-hmm. and then eventually either yeah I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like Gumroad and
tell
that guy, like, you know, I'm not the historian here to talk about Gumroad, I just know that they raised a ton of money, the guy mm-hmm. who did Gumroad, Sawhill or whatever, raised a ton of money. I'm definitely going to get swaths of this story. But raised a ton of money and then basically wasn't at the profitability he needed to be. So lost his investors a ton of money and then like bought back shares. He did something where like all the VC investors lost all their money. Then he owned it all again, like somehow. Sweet. And so everybody got laid off.
That's awesome.
So he got all this money, built this brand, built this product. It didn't come through for the series that it needed to or whatever. And then it's like, okay, this is a failed thing. I own it all now. Bunch of people get laid off. Now it's just me and like 5 or 10 people working on it. And now he makes all the money. He did a crowdsource investment round, raised a bunch of money. None of those people are ever going to see their money. I almost was foolish enough to put money into it. Maybe I even put like 500 and I don't remember. It was on Public or whatever that thing that... Mm-hmm. That what's his name with Josh Pigford did.
Pigford, yeah.
Yeah, with his thing. So anyway, and then now he's like, he just makes big moves and he's trying to be a profitable small company, which is like, yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess it's not surprising me that a VC did something that hurt employees. That it doesn't surprise me that a lot of employees had good jobs and the money was flowing freely. And then some gavel came down. Mm-hmm. And that ended and mm-hmm. those people got screwed. That's yes. not surprising to me at all. I imagine a lot of these VC, I don't want to like name other names that mm-hmm. I would think to name, but I imagine that,
I'll name them. I don't care.
Great. That this is a very real possibility.
Vercel.
Vercel. There's one that like, we don't have any ties with or anything.
Right.
But yeah, this could happen at those places. And then that they took away the free tier is also like, you know, you learn a thing or two when you're just out there. Like Gumroad bumped its rates up to 10% from like, it was way lower than that. And mm-hmm. now they take a dollar out of every $10 I make,
yeah.
Which is absurd. They're the highest of anybody out there. And they just did it. And we're like, we're just doing this now.
Yeah.
So you know, small, I don't know. There's no accountability. It's a frenzy. It's people just trying to sell and make more money. Everybody's trying to liquidate, get that exit. It just makes sense that bad things are going to happen. So it sucks. It was bad. And sorry, Aaron, that he had to be a part of that.
Yeah. So this is, I told John I would allow him to take credit for this take, or he insisted that I not pretend this is my take. So I'll say that this is John's take, but that basically like VC investment, VC businesses are all fake, right? And like,
yeah,
VC investment just allows businesses that aren't actually profitable businesses to pretend that they are viable businesses for a while.
Yeah, totally. You're pretending.
Right.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And then at some point they have to like completely switch business models in order to actually become a viable business, right?
Yep.
And it really sucks for people who are building viable businesses because they have to compete with people who don't have to build a viable business.
Yes.
And like you know, imagine you built like a small bootstrapped database hosting. Are you okay?
My entire interface just fell off the desk, so.
Are you okay?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Then we're good.
All right. But yeah, like imagine like you built like a small bootstrapped database hosting thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you just get completely destroyed by PlanetScale. You go out of business. Then PlanetScale realizes that losing $10 million a year for 10 years is not a viable plan. And so then they go out of business.
Yeah.
Or they just pivot to like only huge B2B customers.
Yeah, they just like cause wreckage, you know?
And so they stop targeting all of the customers that you could have been serving this whole time.
Yes, totally.
And you never got an opportunity to serve these customers because someone decided to come waste a bunch of money serving them badly for a while.
Yeah.
Which is just wild. That's the part that like really sucks. Like, I think honestly, the world would be so much better without VC investors, right? Like, I think that capitalism would be so much nicer if there weren't all these guys who just like made a bunch of money being the second employee at Uber, just like writing checks for terrible businesses.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, isn't that it is pretty wild. I definitely understand. Okay, let me try to defend VC.
Uh-huh.
Because I actually 100% agree with what you're saying, and it's a great point. Thank you, John Drexler and Daniel, for, you know, bringing it home here. But there is like, when it comes to investments, from an investor's perspective, like, you know, you could put, this is something I tweeted about that, like, I'm struggling with, that investing is too boring and I can't get a competitive edge if I put more effort in, unless I'm like brilliant and put my entire life in to maybe get an edge. Probably not. It's just kind of depressing to me. However, like, it's like
building
a business is actually a great investment and a great way to beat the stock market. So if I had $1 zillion, I might try to identify, you know, businesses that that I could like pump and turn into something. And yeah, like that's a thing. But I guess VCs, the thing that's distinct about VCs, like VC funding, is that it's early stage, where like private equity is like more middle, later stage. Private equity is like actual businesses that are profitable and you're going in and buying and improve, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. But like VC is, you're betting on a, you're making a bunch of small bets and yeah, seeing what works. So I don't know. I guess I was just exploring the thought from an investor's perspective. Yeah. If like,
I mean, yeah. So I think that there's like a capital allocation problem, right? Which is like, you know, if you need to, people have too much money. Right? There's these people who have too much money.
Yeah.
And like, if you have $1 million, right? Like, you could, you can deploy $1 million into good businesses, right?
Into good businesses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And if you have $10 million, you could probably deploy $10 million into good businesses.
Yeah.
If you have $10 billion, there's not enough good businesses for you to deploy that money into. So you have to start like lowering your criteria for how good the business is that you're going to invest in, right? And like, if you're not going to like just 10xing your money investing in like businesses that are probably going to succeed is not good enough, because you can't afford to just 10x your money, because you have to 100x your money because you're going to invest in so many losers along the way because all of the good businesses already have all the money they need, right?
Yeah. I mean, I follow, I'm with you on the second half.
Yeah.
On that, like, if you're, yeah, I mean, on just the dynamic of investing in things that will probably fail, you need to have a really, really outsized return on the things that win.
Well, like, if you just listen to sort of like Silicon Valley investor guys talk, it's all about like, what round did you get into this investment on?
Yeah,
oh, I wasn't, I wanted to get in there, but like that round was already full by the time I got there, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, like I got referred into this round by my friend who works here, right? And so like, it really does feel like there's like a scarcity of businesses that people universally agree are going to be successful and need money, right?
Sure, right. Like, I mean, there's always big businesses that you can invest in really big ways, like Berkshire Hathaway, you know?
Well, right. You can like, just buy shares of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can buy shares.
But I'm talking, right. I'm not talking about like publicly traded companies, right? I'm talking about startups, right?
Yeah.
So like in startups, it feels like there's all these VCs who want to deploy all this capital and they're competing with each other.
They are, right.
To be allowed to deploy the most capital into the best businesses, right?
Yeah.
But there's just even more capital. And so like at a certain point, you're losing out on all of the good businesses, or you've already put as much capital as you're allowed to put into the really good businesses.
Yeah.
And you still have more capital to deploy.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start like going down market into like worse and worse businesses to get that capital deployed.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
That just feels like what it is to me. Like,
I just had a thought that it's not like a point, but it's like VCs investing in startups. So you're the startup, you create the startup. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get VC funding because it means that you get a lot of money and they're going to, you know, pump this up and then you're going to raise another round at a certain valuation and you're going to have all this equity and you can liquidate it. Those rounds, I guess. I don't understand.
Feels like that actually really doesn't happen very much.
What, liquidating it at the investment rounds?
I've seen tons of stories of people who sold a business for $100 million and walked away with $100,000.
Yeah, like, that's wild.
Yeah.
So, and I guess you're the founder and you're trying to get somebody else to fund this thing to make it real. You're trying to get somebody else to make it really big. And like, you're like, you don't need a lot to get going. You just need to talk well and get these people to go on your thing. Then the VCs, they know that not everybody's going to hit. Mm-hmm. So they're like, it's not your grandma putting her life savings on your business and you having to fulfill that promise. It's like, I guess there's so many layers of indirection as opposed to just a simple founder building a business, investing his own money and trying to build it. That business is everything to him and he'll be discerning and shrewd and you know, make sure that because that money matters. Like in VC stuff, the money doesn't matter because like who's holding the bag? It's really like the VCs are holding the bag, but they're getting the bag from the ones that succeed. They know a bunch are going to fail. So it's, you know what I mean? It's so much indirection that just feels that's kind of what feeds into that like air of irresponsibility. But then there's like, what about like if you want to compete with Uber or something, you have to build and you want to do it like fast and do a land grab. Like this is a strategy. You have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You need a ton of money and resources.
And like to tie this back to Planet Scale, like it feels like VCs kind of wised up as the economy got really bad. The money stopped being as cheap. Right.
Yeah.
And so there was just like less money going out the door.
Yeah.
VCs started being way more stringent with their requirements. They started looking to invest in profitable businesses instead of unprofitable businesses. Like, so like the criteria for VC has like changed a lot as the economy has shifted. And it feels like Planet Scale and Vercel and like a lot of those sorts of companies in the dev world are kind of like the last companies to raise money. Like, before the VCs like closed up shop and were like, we're not giving money to stupid startups anymore, you know?
Okay.
And so it feels like this is a little bit inevitable because like a lot of companies aren't getting that big next round that they were counting on.
Yes.
Right. And so if you raise just a ton of money at an insane valuation and now you're not getting a second round at that valuation or whatever, I don't know how many rounds PlanetScale's raised, but you're not getting the next round at that valuation and you're not profitable. You're getting pressure from investors to become profitable now, as opposed to like in the old days, they might have let you go for another 5 years.
They might have let you go. Now they're like, we want.
Now they're like, it's time to go now.
Tying the purse.
And
strings,
so in the old days, you could just never be profitable until you sold to Amazon, right? Like you could just be unprofitable right up until the day you sold to Amazon and then they made you profitable.
That's the whole thing, right? Yes.
But now it feels like, well, there's a gap. They haven't sold to Amazon yet. And they are not profitable. And so like they need to close that gap right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it feels like to me. Anyway, to all my friends and to Aaron Francis, please don't go work for one of these extremely venture funded companies right now, because I think they're all laying people off.
Right. And now is not the time to go work at one of these companies.
That was not the time. Yeah.
Very much agreed. Hard agree. And if you do, maybe just think as you're going in that like my job's going to get axed at any moment and ride the gravy train.
A lot of cash up front.
Yeah, right. Go cash.
A lot of cash up front.
Here's another spin on it is like maybe VC is just the delivery mechanism for the competitive strategy of like offering of just disrupting a market by offering something for free, you know, and ruining another business because, you know, basically land. So if like if there's a big profitable business like, you know, taxis or whatever, like go in and disrupt that market by being unsustainable and grab a bunch of land from them and then do exactly what they had already done. You know, it's a way to like, it's a way to conquer a kingdom, really. It's you're like, you surround the castle, you starve them, and then they're forced to come out. And, but the problem is that it's like cyclical where you just become that, like even big picture, like, you know, we used to pay for cable. And I remember like 10 or 15 years ago laughing at my parents, like you still pay for cable. Like I pay for Netflix. I pay like $10 or $15. I pay $10 a month. You pay $70 a month. And it's like, fast forward 10 years, I pay like $80 a month, you know, like more money to all of these streaming services. And like one day somebody's going to combine them all and be like, now you can order this box and put it on your, you know, your mantle and you get a bundle for all the streaming service. We're gonna be like, no way, for $100 a month. No way. That's awesome. And it's like DoorDash, Uber, they're all amazing and they disrupt everything. But then it's like, okay, now you have to tip. And now the fees are higher, you know, and that is whatever. And then the unions come and whatever, all these things happen. And then you end up just doing the same thing as before. So I guess what I'm saying is this is a phenomenon that I have had to experience myself. I still feel young and naive in a lot of ways with this stuff, but it seems like I had this naivety about me like 10, even 5 years ago that I don't have now, where it's like, anybody who's coming in and giving you a free lunch, like they're just gonna, we're gonna be so excited about them and we're gonna feed that and they're gonna be new and exciting and young and independent and disrupty and take down the big guy. And then they're gonna take down the big guy and then they'll become the big guy. And that's just how it is. And so this is like a micro example of that with PlanetScale. It's just.
Well, and like, you know, I think this is like the Starbucks strategy, right? Is just like starve out all the local coffee shops. You know, and like, you remember when Starbucks was like growing when we were like teenagers, you know, and like Starbucks was growing and all of our parents' generation people were like, $5 for a cup of coffee. Are you crazy? I can get a cup. Show me one place in the universe that you can get a coffee that's cheaper than Starbucks now, except for like a gas station, you know, but like there's no coffee shop selling coffee cheaper than Starbucks now, because Starbucks just killed all the coffee shops. And then like they just set the new normal. Coffee, Starbucks is now the default. If you're in coffee, you're competing with Starbucks.
It is. It's true. Yeah.
It's like, and they did it by putting three Starbucks on three of the corners of a intersection where there's one private coffee shop on the other corner, you know? And they're just like, we're just going to starve this person out.
Right.
When they eventually quit or sell to us, then we'll close two of these stores and just own this corner, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's just, that's the way it is. But I read a really good article like a year or two ago that was basically like, millennials and Gen Z are really divorced from like what things actually cost, because so many businesses since like, you know, the economy has been strong for the past decade or so, have been just doing this, like using cheap money, right? Like they're able to borrow money at a very low rate, or like receive investment at a very low rate, and just use that to artificially make things cheaper for us, right? And like, now that the economy is getting bad, like Uber Eats costs $100. You can't get a meal on Uber Eats for like under like $80 or $90. It's crazy. And so it's like, there's just these things where it's like, oh man, like these things used to feel like a good deal. And like now the chickens are coming home to roost with from all of these VC companies.
Yeah.
And like the screws are being turned to like increase profitability. But like along that period, we weren't cooking that much, because we were just getting cheap Uber Eats deliveries, or like we weren't, you know, a lot of people like didn't have cars because they didn't need to, because they could Uber everywhere. Or we, you know, there's all these things that like we weren't doing to provide for ourselves because there were like cheap venture capital funded alternatives for us. And now those things aren't cheap anymore, but we don't have the like built-in infrastructure to do them for ourselves. And so either we're going to learn to do them for ourselves, or we're going to pay the fee. You know?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yep.
It is interesting. I think this is the age of frugality. This is, at least for me, I'm like, I'm returning to all my frugal roots. Mm-hmm. And I think like salaries are like, you know, this, before the gavel came down, you know, when the money was everywhere in Silicon Valley and the VC world and startups and everything, it's like, and even still, the salaries, like when everybody got laid off from those big bank companies, it's like, of course they did. Of course. This was stupid money. So stupid. Like how many people were just like developer relations, or like, you know, some like non-hardcore ad value increase the revenue of this business thing. Mm-hmm. How many just cushy, random, you know, even if they're good and talented jobs, making $250, $350, $450 a year, and you're like, you're not a doctor, you just went to a boot camp and like studied algorithms. I don't know. That is so ridiculous and laughable to me, and is just insane. And so I feel like the reckoning is here, and it is time for us all to get paid less. And it's so weird that development is already not what it was. It's like, I wouldn't recommend somebody get into development, which is nuts that I'm saying that. But it's, I'm just realizing that, oh, I just don't push people towards this at all. I'm not trying to get people to convert, like drop, switch careers, because like it's going to be a really hard road and you're going to have to get to mid-level somehow on your own. And if you can get to mid-level, you'll be making money that you could not make.
We're not really hiring juniors as an industry
right
now.
There's no juniors being hired. All the juniors are screwed.
They're all at Thunk.
If you're mid-level.
There's two juniors and they're at Thunk.
If you're mid-level, fine, but you're just, you could make more being a handyman. Yeah. Like you should really learn how to like renovate bathrooms. You'll make more money, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, this is the thing. It's like, I still think like tech is a pretty good career. I'm not like particularly worried that like the floor is going to completely fall out of my career before I retire.
Really? Well, this is a good segue into the artificial intelligence segment.
We'll get into the AI thing in just a sec. All that to say, like, the other thing I was going to say, though, is like, as the salaries now have to, like, there's downward pressure on salaries now.
Yeah.
Right. But like, it's already, the prices of everything have already gone up. Right. So it's like this, like, simultaneous thing where, like, we're making less and we're paying more for everything.
Yeah.
Right. And like, whether that's rent, or whether that's whatever. Like you and I both luckily bought houses right before everything went insane.
Yeah, dude. What's your mortgage rate? Let's make everybody throw up.
My mortgage rate is like 4.7, which is honestly
low.
Like not great
for now
for the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, like my mortgage payment is $1,400 a month. It rips.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, like all
dude,
my
I made the biggest
about-
mistake. I went 15 year like an idiot. I went 15 year. I could have gone 30 year and under 3%. Been like 2.5%, 30 years, $900 payment or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? So
but
I
went 15 year and now it's $1,800.
Dude, but $1,800, you'll be done in no time.
I know. Yeah.
Like, and
but I think I would rather, I think, have the cash in my pocket at a super low interest rate for 30 years, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But I don't know. Like, if you think about like 15 years from now, like, you might want to move to a different house, right?
Yeah.
Like, if, you know, if the next 15 years goes well for you, like, you might not want to live in the first house you ever bought, right?
Maybe, yeah.
And, like, you know, you could probably sell that house for a lot more money than you paid for it, and you'll own it outright, and it'll be real chill.
I paid $235, and the Zestimate is, like, $280 now, which is...
Oh, really?
Not, like, a huge change, but...
Dude, I paid $209, and my Zestimate's, like, $350.
You live in a more, like, you know, booming area than I do.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet, though.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that to say...
But, yeah, inflation... And
downward pressure on wages, upward pressure on prices. It's time to learn to can.
It's time to learn to can. Yeah. I'm like going
it's time
really
to make a lot
hardcore.
Of soup and put it in your fridge.
Dude, it's soup season, man. It is soup season out here. For real.
Title.
Which it's like it's what's up. I don't know. I feel like it's we all need a good dose of this, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think honestly, we should all be just building small profitable businesses right now. Like, I think that the VC companies, like, they're going to really struggle.
Yeah.
For a while here, right? Like 10 years or I don't know, it hasn't been 10 years yet, but 5 years of like real disruption to that cycle. You know, even if the economy gets great tomorrow, like, I think there's been a real disruption to that cycle. And I think that, like, those VC companies, it's going to take them a while to spin up. And this is, like, a very good moment. If you're going to just build a business with good fundamentals where, like, you pay less than you make.
Right.
And that's your profit. Like, I think now's a pretty good time to be building a business with good fundamentals and just, like, being profitable and bootstrapping, you know?
I agree. I think you're right, Daniel Coborn. It's always been a good time, but it's the best time.
Yeah.
So should we talk about AI?
Yeah. Okay. So there's, we've got 20 minutes tops. Right. So there's this new AI, Devin AI. It's like,
wait, can I just make sure that I say that what PlanetScale did is shitty. And so just, I'm not saying that they're okay. I'm saying that I'm not surprised at their shittiness.
They're predictable.
They're predictably shitty, and the CEO's letter is like laughable and really weird.
And
that
his
he fired
tweets
a bunch
are extremely
of
cunty, honestly.
Oh, he seems like such a douchebag. And yeah, so straight up douchebag guy running that show over there. And I am, you know, just it's like, great. Let's all not use PlanetScale. I'm totally good with that. Not that
Aaron
wants to
pay. Aaron came out on his podcast and said really hard that he's not starting a database startup. But I'm just saying, Aaron, make a hosted SQLite thing. Do it. I swear to God.
AstroDB just came out, which is
if
basically
you just make,
that. It's not
if
SQLite.
If you just make
but...
like the forge of hosted SQLite, you'll make $1 million.
Maybe.
Just $1 million. You're not going to make 100, but you could make $1 million making the forge of hosted
SQLite. And honestly,
SQLite.
Like with his following and his story right now being like, I worked at, you know, database startup, got effed, and now I'm making a better one for cheap because I know everything about databases and have a huge audience. And he would get enough people just using it because of that.
And he uses SQLite on his own website.
But who uses hosted databases? Does everybody? I don't know. I only use Forge, like, you know.
I think most people at a certain scale use RDS.
Right. Like, so who's using PlanetScale? Is it the JavaScript folks who don't
have
actual servers and stuff?
So there is like useful stuff in there. Some of it is just like features of Postgres. So if you were using Postgres, you could just have this. But
oh, I did see somebody tweet like the beautiful AI or the beautiful UI for this, like that they kind of sold it as like a new feature in PlanetScale, but it's really just a UI for something that Postgres does.
Yeah. So they have something called Boosts, which is like, I'm going to butcher this, but basically like in Postgres, like you can have a query that generates a table, right?
Yeah.
But then you can like cache that table.
Cool. Like just views, so like, cached views?
Yeah. So it's like cached. It's like MySQL views, but they're like cached and they can be like, you can cache bust them and recalculate them if okay. certain things change.
More like flexible right? views.
It's like computed. It's like a computer props, but computer props for views.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so that way you don't do all of the work of running the big query when you need to have the big query run, yep. right? You yep. do it ahead of time. Anyway, all that to say, he shouldn't do this, but he totally could make $1 million if he did a hosted SQLite thing.
You think so?
Yeah. Exactly yeah. one. Not two.
Yeah, not two. $1 million a year or just $1 million?
I think you could make 1 million human dollars.
Yeah, over 5 years.
I don't know. Yeah, I think you could make it in the first year. Yeah. I think you could make it in the third year. I take okay. it back.
Yeah,
third year.
Get to that million in the third year. All right.
All right. So all that said, moving along.
We got 6 minutes and we got to talk about how AI is going to ruin our lives.
We got 16 minutes. Okay. So AI, there's this new AI.
We do have 16. You're right.
Yeah. There's this new AI, Devin AI. It's smart.
Oh, yeah.
It can plan. That's the whole thing with it.
Yeah.
So like first things first, it makes a checklist of what it's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also can like, it has its own terminal where it runs commands, reads the output, reads the error messages, changes its code, reruns nice. It.
Yeah, that's like, what's up.
It does the stuff that like humans do that's annoying about AI is that it doesn't test whether it's right or not.
Right.
Right? And this thing...
Which is like, it doesn't seem that hard to do. Yeah. It's like, that's...
Well, it just doesn't have a shell environment, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't seem like there's a leap to get there. It's like, I could literally do that with ChatGPT by just being mm-hmm. the dumb robot that's like... Here's the output. Try again.
Yeah.
You know, is this a successful output? No. Try again. Okay. You know?
So anyway, like we've only seen videos of it. I'm sure the videos are like the most optimistic use case where it doesn't fuck up.
Right.
They have a thing where it's like, do you have a question or do you have a task you want to try Devin on? Like send it to us and we'll pass it on to Devin, which feels to me like they just have like 40 developers in India who are just going to do your task and send it back to you and be like, Devin did a great job. Please give us $100 million in VC. Anyway, all that said, everyone's talking about AI taking our jobs. I think people like see it as a more real threat now that like it actually like did a whole task, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely more like murmurs around there. Like, if you follow Kitsy, the Kitsy, mm-hmm. and what's his name? Ken Wheeler
is one of my new favorite Twitter accounts.
Dude, he has you written all over it.
Yeah. Me and Ken Wheeler are on a similar plane.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Ken, the Kitsy, Peter Levels, like these guys are all like, you idiots don't realize that we're doomed. Like,
yeah,
I agree. And that my first million episode that I have queued that I didn't listen to, that apparently the second half is like...
You listening to that now?
I mean, I keep it around. Uh-huh. I listen occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, all right, cool.
But I'm not a hardcore podcast listener, but I do when I
me
can.
Neither, but I do listen to that podcast sometimes.
You,
it's like my only Hustle Bro content that I
listen
to.
Yeah, it's good Hustle Bro content, and it's same. It's the only one that I go to them for Hustle Bro podcast stuff.
I think they're some of the smartest douchebags around.
Yeah, probably. I'm not a fan enough to even know.
Anyway, all that say, like, I think it's a real threat, and I'm not particularly worried about my career.
Yeah.
I don't know whether to be worried or not. I'm worried about some careers. I think a lot of developer careers are going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I think, like, one of the things that I'm particularly good at and that I've made a lot of my money from is, like, we have lots of old code and old data and like we need to like bring this into the future, you know?
Uh-huh.
And like, I just think like so much of that job is just like planning and strategizing and like coming up with a theory about like how this is going to work that like maybe AI is good at that, but it's probably not going to be the first thing it's going to be good at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it'll be a lot better at like building greenfield projects than it will be at like, okay, well, here's like a giant procedural PHP app.
Sure.
Like,
dude, maybe
the data doesn't match the code.
Maybe it's great at that.
That's true.
That might be its best use case.
I guess.
Straight
I'm
up.
Just like, I'm just like not particularly as concerned because so much of our work right now is like a little more cerebral and we're not just like writing code and crushing tickets,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's the ticket crushing that I would love to go away. Like personally, mm-hmm. If I could have AI, like just close all these PRs that come in for LiveWire for me, it's like somebody identifies a bug, submits a failing test, AI writes a fix, you know, whatever. I just can't trust the AI to know anything more than the immediate fix. And even then, mm-hmm. It doesn't even know how. But it would be, I could see in a pure PHP, it's harder with JavaScript and PHP together, like LiveWire, because you need like a whole environment to test anything. But, mm-hmm. But dude, just like a straight PHP application where it knows the entire code base and it can run tests, it's like done. That thing could probably do extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a very capable programmer. Yeah, so I don't know. I think I will just go down with the ship. So I don't really care.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well. Like,
it's just like whatever, because there's a chance that this all isn't that big of a deal or doesn't fundamentally ruin our lives. And there's a chance it will. But if it does, like, what am I going to do about it? You know?
Right.
I don't know. You're doing the right thing by building a business, making money now while you can, I guess. There is that. Like, make the money while you can, you know? But mm-hmm. Isn't it always that way? Hasn't it always been that way?
Yeah, I guess. But, like, there's stuff like, you know, if you're a lawyer or something and you're, like, starting a law firm, like, you imagine that, like, 20 years from now you're going to have a really big law firm, right?
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
I think there's a little more pressure to like have this be profitable, like real profitable in 2 years rather than in 20 years.
Like it might change your strategy from just open source, like become a popular framework if that was your thing.
This is what we're doing.
What?
But yeah. I said, well, that's what we're trying to do. But
right. Yeah. Funny. Yeah. Right. Change strategy from that to like
doing open source and talking about it and getting clients from it. But yes. Right. But no, but I do think that, like, that's my general read is, like, I do feel a little bit of pressure to make money fast just because I feel like the world is still predictable right now. It's going to get less predictable. I imagine that we'll probably adapt to whatever happens, but right now we don't have to, so cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I would not... If I was 18, I probably wouldn't become a React developer right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Yeah, like
just,
what would, like, you tell an 18-year-old to do?
I don't know, man.
I'm still on this, like, I think that, well, you know, there's also, what about all the people, like half the people at Laricon that work for our own small businesses, and they're like, they were once a technician in a space, like mm-hmm. they were a chiropractor mm-hmm. and then they created an app to like book whatever, and now they make all their money with this Laravel app for chiropractor scheduling, and they sell mm-hmm. it to other chiropractor shops. Like, those people are, I think they're pretty well insulated in the sense that they can still sell this software. They're
well,
not the first wave of people to get killed, and I think they have a long time or a good amount of time until it's over for them, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that small businesses and, like, sole proprietorships and stuff, like, and this is kind of what I was saying about, like, I think now's a really good time to be building a small, profitable business, right? Like, I think that, like, the people who are going to get hit are places that employ 1,000 developers because they would love to employ 600 developers.
Yeah, horrible time to be a junior or a developer as a practitioner for someone else.
Yeah,
you know?
An IC. As they call them.
What's that?
An individual contributor. That's what they call, like, non-managerial developers in money land.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Yeah.
The cogs in the wheel, they're going to get cut first. So if you can, if that, maybe what you tell the 18-year-old is focus on building apps and products and learning how to build apps and products, you know? And
yeah. Then, well, like, yeah, write code that makes money.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yep.
And like, and maybe, right, and
try
now,
not to write, even write code. Like, try not to write that much code.
We're writing code for other people for money, right? So like, we are an expense that could get cut, you know?
Uh-huh.
But like, we're also, we've also got some irons in the fire to be doing other things, you know?
Yep.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the chopping block. Like, who's going to need, like,
who's going to make Livewire though, if you don't?
Well, I'm on the chopping block as far as where I make my money, which is teaching people how to use Livewire. When the AIs do a better job, because you can just be like, tell me what I should do. And they're like, or when you could just say, build this in Livewire. And they go, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And doesn't it kind of feel like if the AIs really took over, that like DevEx based things like Livewire, where it's like, oh, this is only good because it feels good for a human to write this code. Like, that actually becomes way less important.
Yeah, right.
And they're just going to be like spitting out WebAssembly or whatever.
Yeah, they're just going to spit out their own machine code. And the whole concept of like programming for beauty is going to be like ridiculous and super esoteric.
Like, or like, it'll be like a whole other level of higher order languages that are just AI instructions.
Hmm.
Right? Where it's like, well, you still need a way to like commit the requirements to a source control thing so that the AI doesn't change them between deploys.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But maybe we make a whole higher order level of, it's literally BDD.
Like, you literally, your job is now to be a test writer.
Yeah. Which was like the whole plan of BDD was like, we're going to write like management accessible tests.
Yeah.
Where like, we're actually going to empower like executives to write tests and then we're going to make them pass, which is stupid. But, it was cool for a second.
Yeah. People still think it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody was just shouting out like behat,
and
Codeception.
Or like cucumber.
And I'm just like, wow, that's a throwback. I haven't heard those words in a while.
That's funny. I think it's way more viable with ChatGPT. Like, cause when ChatGPT gets good at asking like follow-up questions, like a product manager does.
Yeah.
Then you could just put an executive at ChatGPT, have them fully flesh out what they want out of this product, turn it into a test suite, and then give it to developers or other AIs.
Alexa, build me an app.
Alexa, build me an app.
That's where we're
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Don't think you heard it from anybody else first. Yeah.
Alexa, build me an app came from us.
Yeah, it did.
All right.
This is a good Colborn. One.
Our condolences to Aaron Francis on the many millions you're going to make in the following year.
Yes.
Peace, y'all.
And everybody be mad at PlanetScale, because if there's one thing I've learned,
cast your database hat upon the pyre.
Yes. I have friends, like you and Mitch have both been friends, where there have been times where I have been wronged in my eyes, mm-hmm. and I've bitched to you about being wronged. Mm-hmm. And you.
Loyalty.
Yes. There, you could easily have been like, well, you know, there is another perspective, because there always is. Mm-hmm. But a good friend goes, fuck that guy. You know, that's what a good friend does. So so all of us being good friends of Aaron Francis, our attitude towards PlanetScale is fuck him.
Yep. No, I agree. Loyalty, ride or die. Always.
That's right. Ride or die. Peace out.
Good shit, y'all. Peace. Bow, bow, bow.